Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 105 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host. He was a Gerber baby, Quentin Pierce.
Hello, everyone.
Dude, like, do you still get money for that?
Unfortunately, no. No, my parents steal it all.
Oh, my goodness. Just like every other Gerber baby.
It's pretty upsetting.
You know, you're just as bald now as you were then.
I know. Well, I mean, gotta go back to good old days.
Just kidding, man. It was actually really funny this week when we were talking about going to Mars, and you were like, and Matt was like, I would guess that they would want to keep people with like hairline issues out. I was like, why would they want that? And then you jumped in there with, I guess I can't go to Mars. I was like, what?
Well, he was pointing out that Alex and I are both balding, so we probably won't go to Mars. My hopes.
The joke was about Alex.
I think it was about both of us, but I could be wrong.
Oh. I was like, why do receding hairlines matter? That makes way more sense. I got the joke 2 days later. Speaking of receding hairlines, the owner of Oasis Games, why don't you talk about Oasis really quick?
Yeah, Oasis Games is a sponsor of this podcast. We love it when you guys support them because you directly support us. If you'd like to go there and use the code CCMTG at checkout, you can get 15% off of your first order.
So huge.
That is a large amount, especially if you're buying a legacy deck or something like that. You get a lot of savings there.
Yeah.
If you'd like to use the code WouldThatBeGood at checkout for your subsequent orders, you can get 5% off.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot to us when our listeners will go to Oasis Games and purchase cards. If you are looking for like a place with reasonable prices that are going to have in stock the cards you want, and you're listening to this podcast, it means the world to us when you shop there, because it shows them that them paying us to do this podcast every week. I mean, that's just what they're paying us for, is for you guys to shop there. So check them out, because they really are great, and we mean that. So.
And that's at OasisGamesSLC.com.
Yeah, OasisGamesSLC.com, OasisCCG.com, MTGOasis.com. Check them out, guys, because they're the greatest. So, what's the other way you can support this podcast, Q?
You can put money directly in our pockets by going to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/CCMTG. You can become a patron of the podcast. You can donate anywhere from $1 to the sky is the limit. That is a great way to help us. That helps us set up things like the stream that's going on now, and we'll have further goodies down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys look at the Patreon now, obviously you'll see a lot of pending changes posts. During our next podcast meeting, Quentin and I will sit down, discuss what we want to do with all of these changes. And, there's still a contest going on. If you have any feedback for the Patreon page, go check it out at patreon.com/CCMTG. And... you know, look at what you – and look at the price breakdown and tell us what you want. Tell us what you want to get from the patron and – or to become a patron, and we will give $100 store credit to the best feedback on that. So, let us know what you guys want, and we're going to set it up for you. So, also, you'll have $100 to Oasis Games, which is just awesome.
That's a good chunk of change.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Sorry, I went to grab something really quick. So next up we have hashtag always improving. We got a story for hashtag always improving from a listener. That's what I was grabbing.
Oh, yes, I think I remember this.
Yeah, although it looks like my computer was being a dum-dum and left it. Here we go. So it's from a listener named Justin. So he says... I have a bit of story for you on always improving. So I think that I've already shared this on here, but one of my biggest problems is going on tilt. When I start to lose at a tournament, it ruins my day. Me too, man, me too. Today I played a standard PPTQ and started off 0-2 with blue-black control. Round 1 was a tough loss after mulliganing to 5 against green-white constellation and getting stomped. That would be rough. Round 2 was a tight match against red deck wins, which is a pretty bad matchup for me, so I was happy that I did so well. Normally, I don't go on full tilt mode, and just let such a bad time start to annoy me because me and cause me to start playing even worse. I'm like butchering the story. I apologize. I decided let's play it out and have fun and try and learn and salvage my day. Round 3, I beat a buddy who was struggling, and round 4, I stomped green black elves. Winning round 5 would have been great after such a bad start. I just couldn't deal with Abzan Rally. 2-3 isn't great results speaking, but I started to overcome my tilting and my mood problem. I just thought I'd share about always improving story, so that if you want to share this on this podcast, feel free. I think this is a great thing, actually. So, especially considering he still felt like he was always improving after losing round 5. Because there are so many times in a person's Magic career when they don't look at the positives in something. And sometimes, like, when you're in a rut, you really need to look at the positives. Because, like, it sucks. It sucks to mulligan to 5. Quentin, do you want to know a statistic?
I do.
I have more mulligans in Origin Standard than I do game wins.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. I also mulligan a lot. Like, a lot. Like, statistically, an improbable amount. So, Standard's been pretty frustrating for me. And the thing is I don't think that I'm making bad mulligan decisions. I don't feel like things are going poorly for me. I'm starting to play badly because of how frustrated I am with these 1-land, 6-land hands that I'm mulliganing. We obviously know how much I mulligan at the Pro Tour. And it hasn't stopped. And the thing is, I know that it's just something that's happening to me, and it's not Magic's fault, it's not my fault, it's part of the game. And it's stories like this where when things like that are happening to you, look at the positive side of things and try and learn something. I didn't have a great weekend this weekend in the PPTQ, starting out 2-2 and dropping. But I took away like certain things from it and decided like what I was going to do to improve the next week. And that's something that's pretty important to me, is like always taking something away from an event. I know, Quentin, you feel the same way. Taking away from a match is just everything to you.
Absolutely. This is one of the key things that you have to learn as a Magic player, is that it's not over until it's over. You'd be very surprised on how many times when you just stick things out and, you know, you've got one out left in your deck, or you have to run a runner 3 times in a row, when you actually play it out, it happens. And when you give yourself higher percentage points like that and you don't go on tilt and give yourself the chance to win, that's a very important thing to learn as a Magic player. So thank you, Justin, for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of the always improving segment, how have you improved this week, Q?
So I am attending Grand Prix Seattle here in a little over a month now. Matt Kling and I have been testing lots of Legacy, and I've been playing basically nothing but Omnitel. So the way that I am improving these past couple weeks, actually, is that I've been trying to learn how to play a combo deck, and that's been very rough. I've been playing very terribly, and my brain feels like it's going to explode after Matt and I are done playing, because I'm learning so much, but it's been awesome. I think it's really helping me as a Magic player.
That's awesome to hear, dude. So, for me, something that I noticed this week, and it's probably from like my lack of playing Magic over the past, since the Pro Tour really, and taking my break. As many of you know, I was taking a break from PPTQs, and like this weekend I just like wanted to get out of the house, so I went and played in one, and I was playing so sloppy. And so something that I did yesterday and today is when I'm playing Magic, I'm making sure that I'm thinking about the way I'm tapping my lands. I'm going back to like being consistent and like having a plan for things, and really I'm going kind of back to basics here. And that's kind of just like something that I'm going to push home again. And it's something that I was very proud of myself. I felt like I was better than most Magic players at just tapping their lands right. Like, it's something that just when it doesn't matter most of the time, but when it matters, it's always a game loss. And I felt like I always saw people mistap their lands, and like I caught myself doing it multiple times during that tournament. And so that was something that I went and made sure that I like was hammering home again. So
back to basics is always good.
Yeah. So Yeah, I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to make sure that I'm, like, fundamentally sound before the RPDQ.
Yeah, that seems like it's an important time to do that, especially with Modern being a lot more difficult to tap your lands correctly.
Yeah. So for the podcast, I'm not sure why this isn't edited in the show notes, because I edited it. It didn't save. But, yeah, if you guys don't know, we're updating our Patreon. We're doing a few new things. Quentin and I are going to meet here in the next couple weeks and hammer that out for you guys. So stay tuned for that. Go to patreon.com/ccmtg. Ready for power rankings, Q?
I am. Let's do this.
Okay, what's coming in at number one?
Nothing.
Why not?
Well, that's because we're kind of at a dead point in the format right now, and we don't really care about anything.
Yeah. So we were going to do – so what really happened is we had a guest for this week, and we had to move the podcast. So we were going to do Legacy and Modern Power Rankings, and then I started writing up the Power Rankings, and I was like, well, this is terrible. We just did Modern 2 weeks ago with, like, all of the important Modern information. So we could do a Legacy Mega Rankings episode, and then that would be boring for the listeners because, like – all they really want to hear about is, like, how to build their standard decks and, you know, things like that. Or, like, kind of all kinds of things. Like, I didn't really want to do that. So we're going to – so we changed the episode completely. I wrote up the episode today. I'm quite happy with it. But in part of that was no power rankings. But we do have a card of the week and a deal or no deal this week. So let's start with the card of the week, Q.
Let's do this. Probably one of my favorite cards in some time.
What is it?
We have Elspeth, Sun's Champion. Man, so, I've been playing that card a lot.
Yeah, just for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
There was literally almost no time in Standard where you weren't considering playing this card.
Yeah, basically, there's a little stretch where I was just playing blue-black control, and then every other deck I was playing an Elspeth deck.
For 2 years straight?
Yeah, it's been fun.
What do you love so much about this card?
I just love how versatile it is. It fits perfect into a control-style deck, which everybody knows I love to do. It stabilizes the board if you want it to. It can 1-for-1 or 2-for-2 or, you know, sky's the limit with its -3 ability. And, of course, its ultimate is just game over. So this card has been awesome in all the decks that I play. It's been kind of the perfect finisher for a control deck.
Yeah, I'm very interested in something. I'm going to type something here into the Star City Games database. I'm going to type in Elspeth.
You're wondering if it's the most played Elspeth or something?
No, I want to know something a little bit different. So we're going to go back to 2013 when it was printed, right?
It sounds right.
And we will take a look through history at something. I want to see how many different types of decks this card was played in.
Oh, sure.
I knew that two of these decks would come up, but let's talk about a few of them. So, I wanted to make sure that I was right about this. So, we have Mardu, Bant Control, Esper Control from earlier this year. We have Naya Planeswalkers. Do you remember that deck?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. We have blue-white control. We have black-white control. This is like the Blood Baron of Vaskopa, Desecration Demon, Pack Rat, Obsidat. It was like black-white devotion is what it really was.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't play... It didn't play... what's the card called?
Night Vale Spectre?
No. The one that... The other one. The devotion one.
Grey Merchant?
Grey Merchant of Asphodel, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just like all kinds of decks that it saw play in.
Yeah,
Jeskai tokens.
Yep, Jeskai decks, and then even like red-white decks would play in the board, I think.
Yeah, red-white decks played in the board. There's a red-white deck that took first here. We have a Bant Planeswalker deck that took first at a tournament here. Abzan Midrange. There are 218 pages of decks. So 5,446 decks in the Star City Games database in Standard that played Elspeth, Sun's Champion.
Yeah, that's a lot of seeing play for one Magic card.
Yeah, even though it was usually like a two of, like, the card was just great.
It's one of your better six drop finishers in a long time.
Yeah, and when the card was spoiled, I instantly started brewing the card for Pro Tour Return to Ravnica with Alex Sittner. The first deck that we playtested was actually just an Elspeth Sun Champion deck. It was a blue eye red control deck with Chain of the Rocks and cards like that. And yeah, I mean, it was instantly like the best card that I had played with in a long time. And it was funny because I don't know that we had ever seen a six mana Planeswalker before.
I am trying to think of another one.
I don't even think there is another one, right? Well, there's Garrick. There's six mana Garrick.
Six mana Garrick. I'm sure there are others too that didn't see play.
I'm not sure. I can only think of those two.
Soren Markov was six mana.
That card wasn't great.
It was not great.
But yeah, those two cards both saw play, and like, it was hard because like you see the mana cost, and what you didn't realize is just how well she protected herself at six mana.
Yeah, just everything you want in a Planeswalker. I mean, yeah, 3/1/1 tokens are about the best you can do for protecting yourself. And then, of course, if there's a Siege Rhino, whatever you have on the board that you can kill with a -3, I mean, that happened a lot where you just use Elspeth to 2/1 your opponent. You know it's going to die, but it was still plenty worth it. That's why I love this card, is just its versatility.
Yeah. I mean, just a great Magic card. What other impact did this card have? Like, did you feel like it defined either of the metagames at all?
I don't really think it was defining. Well, I don't know. Maybe these days with Abzan it's a little more defining. I think when it first came out, it was more just, it's your best choice for finishers, and a blue-white deck or what have you is just going to find any 6-drop that can kill your opponent quickly or, you know, stabilize the board. But I think Elspeth just fit it the best then.
I hate to interrupt you. I think you just found the key to this card, is that it stabilized you and killed your opponent.
Right. It's kind of almost like a Wrath that kills somebody, right? It makes the creatures on the other side of the board not really matter anymore, and then it eventually kills your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, just a crazy... I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but there was a joke about, like, I think it was Limited Resources, where, like, Tim Mulby was on, and he, like, I think LSV said he had the best comment in the history of coverage, where the person he was commentating with was like, oh, this Elspeth has 9 loyalty, like, 9 counters on it. You don't see that very often. And then Tim Mulby was like, well, I mean, you also don't see a 6-sided dice with 9 on it very often either, because it was a 6-sided dice that was turned upside down.
Nice.
but I think that describes Elspeth quite well. Is like she never got to 9 because like you just minus her and then attack that turn and they die. Like yeah. She was like a ticking time bomb, but it was not an annoying ticking time bomb for some reason.
Yeah, I mean Elspeth didn't really receive much hate that I ever heard of. General consensus was that people really enjoyed the card.
Yeah, I mean, being at 6 mana just meant that, I mean, if they got to 6 mana, like, they, against, like, your aggro deck, like, they probably deserve to win that game anyway.
Right, exactly. I really think that this card was a home run by Wizards. I think this is one of my favorite Magic cards of all time, for sure. It's definitely up there. You know, a lot because the art's great. I love playing with the card. And I think it's just right at the sweet spot for power level.
I'm going to read a deck list here for you, Q.
Let's hear it.
And let's see how many of our listeners remember playing against this deck. I remember playing against this deck, but I wonder how many will remember it. we have 3 Archangel of Thune, 3 Master Biomancer. Do you remember that card?
I do.
Okay. 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 4 Courser of Crufix, 3 Nyxley Shrine. I don't remember that card being in this deck. I also don't remember the Braemaz. But then we have Tristani, Celestia's Voice, Banishing Light, Detention Sphere, Advent of the Worm, a Johnny Mentor of Heroes, and Elspeth Sun's Champion. What an interesting deck!
Was this not when Thragtusk was in Standard?
So there were 2 Bant decks. This was the one that saw a little bit of a play on the Utah Invitational circuit. I believe it top-aided one of the Utah Invitationals.
And they weren't playing Thragtusk, huh?
Well, it wasn't when Thragtusk was in Standard, right? Because there was Theros cards in Standard at the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm being silly.
Yeah. Naya midrange with, like, more planeswalkers play this card. So many decks. So, how do you replace something like this card in a format? Can you?
It's pretty difficult. This kind of is going to leave the same hole for white that the Titans rotating out did. It's going to be difficult to find as good of a six-drop finisher, I think.
Well, you and I had suggested not even playing a six-drop. We both think that Gideon is a fine replacement.
That's probably the case. Gideon's a little bit different in that it kind of lends itself to developing your board a little bit more. Unlike Elspeth, where you can just have an empty board and just stabilize on the spot.
Sure.
But I could still see Gideon being plenty fine in a control strategy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people compare it to the old Elspeth, which saw plenty of play in blue-white control.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, the nice thing is we have plenty of time to figure out how to... I think replacing cards is an interesting concept. And the reason that I put this topic into the show notes is... Sometimes there's no replacements. Sometimes your deck loses Ponder, and Delver of Secrets sees no more play.
That is a fact.
You know, even though you can still Snapcaster and summon those guys, it just doesn't matter. Ponder was the thing. And without Ponder and Gitaxian Probe to, you know, play these, like, really cheap cantrips, there's just nothing to replace those cantrips, so Delver of Secrets will never see play again. That being said, there's no way Blue-White Control and Siege Rhino don't see play now, right?
Right. That's because Elspeth was never really the core of the deck. The core of Abzan is Siege Rhino. The core of Blue-White Control was Supreme Verdict. You just kind of played Elspeth because your best option...
Sphinx's Revelation, sir. Sphinx's Revelation.
Sure. Core of the deck, Supreme Verdict plus Sphinx's Revelation.
But, yeah, I completely agree with you. You have to... Sometimes role players can be replaced. A great example of this is green decks are losing, you know, they're losing two great cards in Courser of Gruffix and Sylvan Caryatid. But you have to remember that there's other great 3-drops, and we're getting another great 3-drop, too, in the... What is that card? Do you know what the name of the card is, Q, already?
I don't remember the name, but I know which card you're talking about. The 2-2 that grows.
Yeah, the 2-2 that grows. I'm going to get the name of the card just so that we're not...
It's Landfall Grow, right?
Yeah, let me get it for you. MTG Salvation. There's only one other ramp spell. So if you're looking for multiple ramp spells, you're in trouble by losing Sylvan Caryatid. But, you know, what is his name? Rattleclaw Mystic is serviceable in Jund. It's serviceable in Mono Green. It's serviceable in Rug. It's serviceable in Green Red. There's lots of decks that card will be serviceable in, but obviously it's not Sylvan Caryatid. But you, like, for 3-drops, like, the thing about Courser of Gruffix is he stabilized you and granted you card advantage. You know, there's another card in Standard right now that does that in Deathmist Raptor. It does both of those things. And then Undergrowth Champion, the name of the card that we were looking for. Green 1 for a 2-2. If damage will be dealt to it, remove a 1-1 counter from it, and prevent that damage. And then Landfall, whenever you play a land, it gets a 1-1 counter. And this card, it's kind of more of a 4-drop, but man, it's going to grant you card advantage just as often, and it's a great 3-drop.
This card, I don't want to get too far into this, but man, this with the fetch land, this card's beaten in for 4 on turn 4. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, definitely a great Magic card. So there's definitely things that you can be replaced, and that's what I'm talking about, those role players. Those Sylvan Caryatids, those Courser of Gruffix. You know, there's so many things that can replace things, and, like, your decks can still be good. But the thing is that sometimes decks are just dictated by a metagame anyway. There's very few archetypes that see play all the way through Standard. Heck, even Delver and Stoneforge Mystic didn't have two years of heyday in Standard. Stoneforge Mystic obviously saw play in both of its years, but Delver of Secrets didn't see any play its second year.
Yeah, basically none. I can't think of a deck that played it and did well.
Yeah, like very few cards. Primeval Titan, Birthing Pod, I want to say Whisper of the Muse saw play both of its years. Like, there are obvious, Psychotalk, I believe, saw play all the way through. There are cards that do see play, and that's because they're the linchpins. The linchpin of the Delver deck was Ponder. So because Delver and Ponder only saw play with each other for 1 year, they only got 1 year. Siege Rhino is probably the linchpin behind this deck. So there will be a Siege Rhino deck. Don't quote me on that.
I'm pretty sure that's safe.
I would think it's safe. But man, Elspeth, card saw tons of play. I mean, 5,500 decks almost.
She will be missed.
That's a crazy amount of Elspeth, man. So Q, what is your plan to replace her?
Well, I have high hopes for Ojutai, I think.
Ojutai? Gideon? Both of those cards, probably?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Any others that stand out to you? What about things... A lot of people don't realize, like, there are some cards that have to wait for their competitors to rotate out before they see play. What kind of cards do you think are like this, Q?
Well, as I mentioned before, Ojutai, I think not only is Ojutai your next best option, but Ojutai gets a lot better with Elspeth rotating out of the format, first of all. Other cards that I can see, though, other than Ojutai, I can't really think of any insane 5-6 drops in blue or white colors.
Well, Fleeceman Lion didn't see play until this year, almost. He was in Standard for most of last year, and basically only saw play in green-white aggro.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and he's been insane in this format.
Yeah, very interesting. I actually can't really explain why that is for Fleeceman. Can you think of what card was in the back?
You know, I can't remember Standard enough, but there must have just been better 2-drops or, like, better things to be doing with your mana. Or maybe Black Devotion was just so good against that card because of the removal suite. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Bioblight and Devour Flesh, I guess.
Yeah, Bioblight, Devour Flesh. I believe we had... Yeah, I'm not sure what else would have caused it. You know, other cards that came to mind, obviously, are things like all of the cards that had to wait for Jace to rotate out. Like, Hero of Bladehold saw tons of play after Jace was gone. Where it saw play in black-white tokens, it saw play in mono-white humans. Like, the card saw tons of play once Jace rotated out.
That is a great example. There are probably many, many creatures like that in the Jace era.
Yeah. There's just... Sometimes there's just a villain in the format, and you have to wait for it to rotate out. And I think that Quentin's right. I think that Elspeth was a villain for cards like Ojutai, and I do think Ojutai is a great card, and it will probably see tons of play. So let's talk about our deal or no deal this week. So every once in a while, we want to talk about something that's happened in Magic, and whether we think it's a big deal or no deal. Name is blatantly stolen from the game show, Deal or No Deal, but who cares? So Deal or No Deal, there's no 2 or 1 mana ramp spells in Battle for Zendikar. Quentin? Alright, let me put a caveat here. There is a 2-mana ramp spell in a creature that only ramps into other creatures.
We've got a couple that are like that too. So we've got Rattleclaw Mystic.
And well, no. In Battle for Zendikar.
Okay, in Battle for Zendikar, I see.
So, in Battle for Zendikar, there's only 1 2- or 1-mana ramp spell.
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. And it only ramps into creatures.
That's pretty bad.
The card is definitely not bad, right? It still taps for any color of mana. It even has haste if you want to play a 1-drop after it. But man... The guy's literally teasing me by holding a Lotus Cobra. What do you think about this, Q? Is this a big deal?
I think it is a big deal. I think decks like Green Red Devotion are going to be severely powered down without their Elvish Mystics and Sylvan Caryatids. It'll be interesting to see how this affects the format. In the past, for the most part, we've seen Mono Red kind of become very popular and then basically be non-existent. And I kind of expect this to help Mono Red stay in the format for a longer period of time.
Yeah, how do decks that don't have access to like playing their 4-drops or their 5-drops early beat this kind of deck?
I think the answer is they don't. I think the Eldrazi ramp decks that we're definitely going to see, and people try in Standard. I don't know if they'll succeed, but I think they will definitely get the crap beat out of them by Mono Red because of this.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of tools for Mono Green to beat this deck. And I think that it's a big deal in, like, the case of Siege Rhino, too. The thing about the way Abzan started is it was a Sylvan Caryatid Corsair Krufix deck. It was a Sylvan Caryatid deck until Mono Red was basically gone. It was a Sylvan Caryatid deck for the majority of its time in Standard. People don't remember that because it got to stop playing that card. When did it? Why did it stop, Q? Because all you cared about was the mirror match, right?
I guess that makes sense.
I mean, for a very long time, it was a Corsair Krufix Sylvan Caryatid Siege Rhino deck. I myself played a lot of Abzan with Sylvan Caryatid in it. Obviously, there are other decks that Sylvan Caryatid saw play in, but I think that it is a hit for Siege Rhino decks. Even though it didn't have to play them later in the format when Mono Red was either slower or gone, I think that it's an issue for Siege Rhino, especially when you consider just being able to cast a Siege Rhino.
Yeah, we'll see if the new mana base helps with that. I think it will, but having Sylvan Caryatid gone will definitely be a huge thorn in lots of decks. Sides, I think, especially for Green Red Devotion, though.
Yeah, I don't think there's a reason to play Green Red Devotion without Xenagos anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that card was insane in that deck, especially when you're playing that turn 3.
Yeah. I think that the bigger hit is when you think about the things that things like Abzan are losing, like, if you were just losing Sylvan Caryatid, that'd be fine, but you're also losing your early interactions quite a bit. You're losing a lot of early interactions against the aggro decks. You're losing even your net cards like Hero's Downfall. So I think that Sylvan Caryatid is going to had a bigger impact. I mean, obviously it had a huge impact in Standard. Let's not pretend it didn't. But just not having anything to do, no Rampant Growth, no Farseek, no Sylvan Caryatid, no Lotus Cobra, no Overgrown Battlement, nothing. How many years has it been since we didn't have 2-mana ramp spells? No Green Sun Zenith for Birds of Paradise, no Sphere of the Suns. Quentin, what are we going to do?
Have a mental breakdown.
I almost had a heart attack, dude. I really did. I almost, like, died.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens to the metagame. I can't really tell you if it's going to be for better or for worse. It's definitely something that I don't like to see because it affects the decks that I like to play with and against.
Yeah, but we have cards like people saying are things like Nissa's Renewal is playable. For those who don't know, that's a sorcery for 6 mana that you search your library for 3 land cards and gain 7 life. They think this is the future of ramp.
Yeah, if that's the future ramp, then the future looks very glum.
7 life is a lot.
7 life is a lot, but 6 mana is a lot to be ramping.
Especially if you don't have something to ramp from 2 to 4, and then 4 to 6.
Right, yeah, we've got some options for 3 to 4, but that's about it.
So we got 3 to 5, right? Because you got to include your land drop.
Sure.
And we even have 4-mana ramp spells with, like, the new Kiora actually ramps you, Hedron Archive, great 4-mana ramp spell. There's lots of things that get you there once you're at 4 mana. The new From Beyond, 4 mana. So, like, and we even have lands that ramp you once you're at 4 mana. So, like, all the good ramp starts at 4 mana, you know. Blighted Woodland is a land that gets you... I guess that's technically 5, because you have to tap itself. But, man, there's just nothing from 1 and 2 mana.
Yeah, it is gone for the time being.
And there's no Pyroclasm to clean up the little dorks that are going to kill you.
Yeah, I struggle to see what the point of playing a ramp deck is. I mean, I guess if it just becomes an Abzan-centered metagame again, then I could see it. But if you can't beat aggro and you're probably not favored against control, I think you're in trouble.
Yeah. To be fair, enchantments like From Beyond and even Kiora, like, those are very powerful cards. And the Eldrazi, you know, with the X Eldrazi that's just X mana cost that comes into play with one counters. I believe his name is Endless One. Ulamog and Desolate Twin, these are very powerful cards. So you do have a reason to ramp. You kind of just have to find out how to do it. But the other thing that ramp does that people forget about so much, from Farseek, Sylvan Caryatid, Rampant Growth, even Lotus Cobra, is the fixing. Green has fixed your mana since Quentin and I started, and that's just not going to happen unless you're playing a four-color deck and you want to play Rattleclaw Mystic.
Yeah. I think the direction that ramp is headed is probably to mono green once again, maybe a light splash of red or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, there are 2 3-mana ramp spells. You know, we played Cultivate, Growth Spasm, Haro back in our day. But the thing is that we had Lightning Bolt and Pyroclasm.
Right, clean up the early game.
Right, so it's going to be interesting. We're going to see. So I agree with Quentin. I think it's a huge deal. I wonder why they did it. I don't know. You have to remember that we're only getting the fetch lands for 6 months with the dual lands because of the format change.
Yeah, that is definitely something to consider.
So maybe there's ramp in the next set. Maybe they're setting up for the Eldrazi to be good in a little while. They're giving us 6 more months with cons because we get short amount of times with cons. There's all kinds of things to consider. But I agree with Quentin. I think this is a big deal. Speaking of ramp decks, Q, should we go into our training grounds?
Let's do this.
Quentin, I love ramp. I love casting a big Fatty McFatterson on turn 4, and my opponent looking at it and going, I can't beat that.
It sounds like a good time to me.
It's just a great time. What is, you think, my favorite Fatty McFatterson of all time?
If I had to guess, I would say that it's Primeval Titan.
Primeval Titan. So, there's probably some of our listeners that have never cast a Primeval Titan queue.
That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. Should we explain what it does?
Yes, I believe I can probably recite the text on there verbatim.
Oh, that's going to be great, because I have it in front of me. So I want you to go from top to bottom.
Okay. Primeval Titan is 4 colorless and 2 green for a creature giant that has trample. It has, when it enters the battlefield, search your library for 2 land cards and that enters the battlefield tapped. Then whenever it attacks, do the same thing.
It was almost verbatim. I thought you were going to miss the attacks part.
Oh, no way, man.
So it says whenever a Primeval Titan enters the battlefield or attacks, you may search your library for 2 land cards and put them onto the battlefield tapped and then shuffle your library. And it is a 6-6.
Oh, I forgot the 6-6. My bad.
Yeah. You know what? Weirdly, not the most forgotten thing on this. You remember it had trample.
Oh, do people not remember that?
I believe I have attacked with a Primeval Titan more times where they forgot that it had trample than they remembered it.
Yeah, you're not blocking that one too well.
They block it a lot with 2/2s. All right, take 4. I blocked it. Yeah, it has trample, bro.
Oh, I'm dead?
So let's talk about a card that got printed in 2 core sets and saw play its entirety of its life. So this week we want, oftentimes we'll go back in history and look at great decks of history. And this week we want to talk about great decks of history, green red ramp decks with Primeval Titan. So QJ, should we talk about the beginning back in time, the very beginning of Primeval's lifetime?
That's going to be Rug Force, right?
Yeah, Rug Force. So this was a pretty early deck. So I'm going to read a deck list from 2010. So this deck is... I'm also going to post links to all these deck lists in the show notes for the listeners, but we're going to read it for those who don't want to look at the show notes. So we have three Destructive Force. This card is red, red, five. Sorcery, so seven mana. Each player sacrifices five lands, and Destructive Force deals five damage to each creature. This deck plays four Explorers, three Cultivates, four Mana Leaks, four Lightning Bolts, three Into the Royal, three Jace the Mind Sculptor,
yes.
Three Garrick Wildspeaker, also a great card. Those two are great Magic cards together. Four Primeval Titan, three Frost Titan, 26 lands, including four Halimar Depths. For those who don't know, that card is, when it enters the battlefield, look at the top three cards of your library and put them back in any order. A Mystifying Maze, Kuyu-J.
You want me to read that one?
Do you know what it does? Do you remember it?
I'm looking at it right now, unfortunately, but I think I would have remembered.
Okay, go for it.
All right, so it's add one colorless, four tap, exile target attacking creature an opponent controls. At the beginning of the next end step, return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control.
Yeah, this deck also plays four Raging Ravines and a Tectonic Edge. Man, this deck list is sweet, Quentin.
Yeah, you've got Jace the Mind Sculptor, Primeval Titan, and Lightning Bolt in the same deck, so sign me up.
Yeah, all of Quentin's favorite Magic cards, really.
Absolutely.
I would guess all of those make your top 10.
Certainly.
Yeah. I think they all make my top 10. They might all make my top 5. This deck was interesting. So the game plan is really kind of ramp into a Titan. Most of these decks played Explore and Cultivate and possibly another ramp spell. This one's a little bit more controlling with only three Destructive Force and more Into the Royals. Some of them played one to two Into the Royals. There were lists that obviously played only four Primeval Titans or like... But the goal is you want to get a Planeswalker or a Titan in play, and then you want to cast Destructive Force because now you can't lose.
Yeah, when you're attacking with a Primeval Titan on a completely empty board, you're probably winning.
Not only that, but you recover from the Destructive Force.
Exactly.
So while your opponent's like digging for lands, you're just playing them from Primeval Titan, and then you're leaving up things like Mana Leak, where like, how do they ever pay for Mana Leak after you destroy five of their lands?
You don't.
Yeah, so it was just almost impossible for them to win after you resolve a Destructive Force. So what happened to this deck, Q?
Well, you know, this is actually a little bit before my time. If I had to guess, aren't we moving into the Cobblade era at this point?
So no, not yet. So what happened here is another Primeval Titan deck that was tier 2 the year before got really, really good.
Okay, so Valakut pushed it out of the format.
Right, so the problem with casting a Destructive Force is if your opponent also has Titans in play, it's not very good.
That makes sense.
So what happened is we have the deck Valakut. This is the deck that made the deck Cobblade actually exist. So Blue-White Control thought it would just crush these Primeval Titan decks by casting Mana Leaks against them, and then they were getting crushed by Lotus Cobras and Summoning Traps. So they needed early pressure, and while being able to leave up counter spells at the same time, to play a more tempo strategy. So they played Squadron Hawks, becoming Kago, and then Channel Fireball broke the metagame open by putting Sword of Feast and Famine and Stoneforge Mystic in their deck once... Mirrodin Besiege came out to beat specifically Valakut.
Because Spencer and I stopped playing the deck.
Spencer didn't for a little while. I just adjusted my deck to four Primeval Titan, four Lotus Cobra, four Overgrim Battlement, four Primeval Titan, four Summoning Trap, and a lot of ramp spells. Which, by the way, is the deck list we're about to read almost. So this deck took second at Grand Prix after Mirrodin Besiege came out. Because they found a way to be able to block things on the ground and like put early pressure on them with Lotus Cobra and things like that. So this decklist is three Inferno Titan, four Lotus Cobra, four Overgrim Battlement, four Primeval Titan, two Green Sun Zenith, four Explore, four Summoning Trap, four Harrow, three Calling the Heart Expedition, 28 lands, with four Volokit, and then the lands. This deck didn't play Raging Ravine, which is interesting. But yeah, out of the board, we have four Pyroplasm. No Lightning Bolts is something that happened. I did play Lightning Bolt because I wanted to kill Stoneforge Mystic, but this deck was basically the monster of Standard. So people remember that Standard as like the Cobblade era, but the only reason Cobblade came into existence is because nothing else could beat this deck.
Yeah, this deck was quite dominating. It had a game plan that kills you basically on turn 5, I would say, pretty consistently.
So how does this deck win, Quentin?
This deck wins by putting four mountains into play, and then having a Valakut in play and finding two mountains after that, or having multiple Valakuts in play.
Sure.
But at that point, both of your mountains with one Valakut in play deal 6 damage to your opponent.
No, 3 damage.
Oh, I was lumping them together.
Oh, sure. So, yeah. So every time your Primeval Titan would attack, it would, or enter the battlefield, it would deal 6 damage.
Right.
So even if they were alive, usually their board was getting cleared. Like, they didn't really have a way to win because they'd finally find a way to kill a Primeval Titan and you just summoning trap for another one or play an Inferno Titan. Like, a Primeval Titan grinding Volokits was just, it was so consistent. It was this ramp deck that, like, killed you quickly, and how do you beat this 6/6 trampler anyway when it's killing everything in its way? Or just dealing you to the face, and then you have to deal with a 6/6 trampler that's attacking you. All kinds of things like that are happening. All the while, it's Harrow's and Colony Heart Exposition. It's ramp spells that are getting you to these Primeval Titans. If you draw them late game, actually just deal you 6 damage.
Right, and this deck had a lot of hate against Mana Leak. First of all, because you're ramping a ton, so eventually Mana Leak doesn't really matter anymore. Then you're playing Summoning Trap.
Yeah, so, like, if they Mana Leak your Lotus Scrubba, and then you're like, okay, put Primeval Titan into play, there wasn't really anything you could do against that on turn 3 at the time. Nobody was playing things like Journey into Nowhere, or an Oblivion Ring and Path to Exile had just rotated out. So, there just wasn't great ways to deal with a Titan outside of Mana Leak.
I'd say the minor exception to that was the Blue-Black Control deck that actually won this tournament. So that's probably why they'd go for the throats and stuff like that, but.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if Blood Black Control won this specific Grand Prix.
I've got the Grand Prix up right now. I did.
Oh, where did you find it?
I just went to TCG Player and searched the player's name.
Oh, good talk, Q. Do you want to ship me that link?
Yeah, it's coming.
So let's talk about, so Rug Force gets pushed out of the format by Volokit. Volokit. It still saw play, like, while during the Cobblade era, there were things that you could do to try and beat the deck, but, I mean, Cobblade basically took over the format and made it so that the problem was is that Cobblade was good against the decks that Volokit was good against, plus it was good against Volokit. So, the other thing that happened, though, is once Cobblade was banned, there was another deck that was quite good against Volokit. What was that, Q?
You know, I am actually trying to remember here what kicked the crap out of Valakut at that point.
I'll give you a hint. It rhymes with Splinter Twin.
Yeah, that's right. I totally forgot about Splinter Twin.
Yeah, so what happens is they ban Jace the Mind Sculptor and Stoneforge Mystic. Spencer's like, sweet, I'm going to start playing Valakut again. And then I keep dying on turn 4, and I cannot interact with my opponent because they have a 1/4 that kills me. And Lightning Bolt doesn't kill 1/4s.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I even tried playing Dismember.
Yeah, I mean, that plus Nature's Claim, you had a fighting chance, but
I did. I beat Matt Kling playing that deck. I was the only Volokit player to ever beat him.
Really?
I was. But I was super metagamed against him. The thing was is that Volokut did see play after that. It had a rough time with this deck. Birthing Pod decks were starting to see play as Birthing Pod was printed. You know, it was 2 months of really the greatest standard format that I ever remember, actually.
Yeah, I enjoyed myself quite a bit that format. There was even a pretty sweet Cobblade deck. I mean, obviously it wasn't Stoneforge, Jace, Mind Sculptor, but you're still playing Squadron Hawks and Jace Blarins and stuff like that. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it even Consecrated Sphinx.
Yes. Oh, yes. Consecrated Sphinx. I love that card.
That would replace Elspeth in your mind.
Yeah. Can we have that instead of the other blue-black guy?
Yeah, I think that... like, Wolf Run did a lot for Standard. It really did define the metagame. People don't realize that the only reason that Cobblade came into existence was really to beat this deck. And that's how good Volokit was. It was, I don't care how bad, like, some of my other matchups are, because Volokit is, like, oppressive. Because Volokit kept other decks out of the format, which made way for Cobblade to come in. Because all of Cobblade's bad matchups were just destroyed by Volokit.
Yeah, this is kind of what we're talking about with our Deal or No Deal. This deck was very good against aggro because you just kill them before they kill you.
Yeah, and like if you didn't, like you played it an Inferno Titan and they were like, oh.
Or you just play a Pyroclasm on turn two and they can never win.
But yeah, you board in your Pyroclasms too. Like you just Pyroclasm them. I mean, they can't be either of those cards, right? Like if you play a Inferno Titan on turn four, they're like, all right, so you 2-for-1'd me. I'm going to attack you down to 6, you're going to attack me, and then you're going to kill all my guys.
Yeah, or you're just dead.
Or I'm dead. Like, and then you play another Titan, or a summoning trap for a Titan, and it's just, it's crazy, exactly. Luckily, Cobblade got Batterskull later, and then they didn't need anything.
Yeah, and then the deck was straight oppressive, and nothing else mattered.
Yeah. But it was an interesting metagame before Batterskull, where you did actually still have Volokit decks that could... that were metagamed against that deck and still be aggro, but were kind of bad against, like, some white decks. Like, the white life gain deck was very good against Volokit. Man, can you believe we had a white mono-white life gain deck that was, like, tier 1.5?
I totally forgot about that. It was playing, like, a Johnny's Pride Mate, right?
Yeah, I think so, and I think it also played, like, Sarah Ascendant.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. That was a bizarre deck.
Yeah. Man, that was a sweet standard.
Yeah, I really, that was kind of like my FNM heyday. I remember going with my brother a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's when we met, man. That was, I mean, I guess it was a little before that that we met.
Yeah, I mean, that was when we first actually started, like, talking and hanging out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, what happens next? So, we have a rotation. Primeval Titan still in standard. Well, let's... Can I just brag here?
Go for it, by all means.
So what happens here, Q?
What happens...
Yeah, after Cobblade and all these decks rotate out, it's rotation. Zendikar is gone, but we still have Primeval Titan. What do we do?
We keep playing Primeval Titan.
But how do we do that?
Well, we get some pretty sweet lands in Kessig Wolfrun and Inkmoth Nexus.
Well, we already had Inkmoth Nexus.
That is true. Kessig Wolfrun was kind of the linchpin, I guess, that brought it together. It would probably still have been played even with just Inkmoth Nexus and no Wolfrun. Don't you think?
I don't know. I think that Wolfrun is really like... because like there were decks that were Wolfrun decks that cut Inkmoth Nexus.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah, so let's start with... the very first tournament I played in Innistrad Standard. This is the deck list. 1 Acidic Slime, 1 Birds of Paradise, 2 Inferno Titan, 3 Primeval Titan. That's a weird number, 3 Primeval Titan. 3 Solemn Simulacrum. Here's why we played 3 Primeval Titan, by the way, because we were playing 3 Thrun. 3 Viridian Emissary. That got cut later. Here's another great one. 3 Garrick Primal Hunter. 2 Arc Trail. Ah, man. Can we have Arc Trail right now?
I'd be okay with that.
I would play Arc Trail. 3 Beasts Within, 1 Devil's Play. Apparently I like Fireballs more than I admit.
Devil's Play was great.
3 Green Sun Zenith, 4 Rampant Growth, and 4 Slag Storm. Obviously, I missed on Sphere of the Suns. And what turned out to be Galvanic Blast. But man, I like... brewed up this deck, like, playing 2 Inkmoth Nexus, 2 Kessig Wolfrun, a Ghost Quarter, you know, and I went to town, Q.
Yeah, it seems like it was quite the deck. I mean, so was this your state's list?
This is my state's list.
Okay.
So we have 1 Tree of Redemption on the sideboard, by the way, for my Green Sun Zenith target.
Oh, that was a sweet card. I like that card.
Oh, my goodness. Can we go back to this standard?
I'd be all right with that. I really enjoyed this one.
Oh, man. But so early in the format, we see what happened here is there was this deck called... I believe they actually rehashed the name of an old deck. It was the Sun Titan deck. Do you remember what it was called?
Oh, Solar Flare.
Solar Flare. So, like, it's this deck that, like, grabs a Sun Titan, it mills itself, and then puts a Sun Titan into play, and then it grabs a Phantasmal Image to copy the Sun Titan, and then grabs another Phantasmal Image to copy the Sun Titan, and then grabs another Phantasmal Image to copy the Sun Titan, and then you're dead, because they have 4/6/6s.
Man, that deck was so sweet, too. You could Pacifism a Thrun.
Yeah, that's true, but man, did it have a bad matchup against freaking Wolfrun.
Yeah, it did.
So here's what happened. So eventually the Wolfrun deck, it saw some play early in the format. But we're going to move a little bit further. Obviously, I top-aided States with the deck, luckily, you didn't even mention why that matters. So apparently it is over, and you can no longer make fun of me for it.
I will stop.
Deal. Matt Kling is not on the podcast. And then we move to the unblocked wolf. And this is actually when the deck, I believe, became a thing of beauty. This is actually in the Delver metagame, where this deck won a Pro Tour. Fun fact, Quentin, how many times has Delver won a Pro Tour?
I believe that is zero.
How many times has Primeval Titan won a Pro Tour?
At least one. Is it more than one?
I think it's two.
What would be the other one?
I believe that Green Eldrazi Ramp won a Pro Tour.
Huh. That may be true.
I believe that
I don't think it did. That when Eldrazi was the thing, that was when Guillaume Wafotapa and Guillaume Matignon played in the finals.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just one Pro Tour.
I only know that because I watched that top eight like
100 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But let's read the beauty that is the Brian Kibler Wolfrun Ramp deck.
Oh, man. Nope. Hold on. Sorry. Let's get this right. So it did win two because Wolfrun won Worlds.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. So it did win Worlds also.
Yeah, with Junya Ianaga. Wasn't that his name?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Ha! Suck it, Delver! I also do believe that Wolfrun ended up having a good matchup against Delver, even though no one believes me.
Oh, I very much agree with you.
Yeah. Well, you should tell that to Matt Kling.
Well,
Matt's Well, let's read this deck list. So this is where Wolfrun got very – and we'll talk about this on this podcast, but, like, these decks became control synergy decks, which is a beautiful thing. When people talk about the Innistrad format, they're like – there was just this tempo deck. There were no control decks, and I'm always like, the control deck was Wolfrun, guys. The deck played like Slagstorm, Whip Flare, Galvanic Blast, and then like Inferno Titan as like its finisher, and then it just killed you. Like, it was very controlling.
Yeah, playing tons of removal. So we're now to the Brian Kibler deck, right?
Yeah. So do you want to go ahead and read this deck list, Q?
I'd love to. This is actually probably my favorite version of Wolfrun. So we have 3 Solemn Simulacrum, 1 Acidic Slime, 1 Birds of Paradise, 4 Huntmaster of the Fells, 2 Inferno Titan, 4 Primeval Titan, 1 Thrun, 4 Sphere of the Suns, 4 Galvanic Blast, 2 Green Sun Zenith, 4 Rampant Growth, 4 Slagstorm, 1 Whip Flare.
Quentin, you only have Solemn Simulacrum and Sphere of the Suns. Why are you playing 4 Galvanic Blast?
Well, first of all, it's just sweet to have a 1-mana kill spell for Delver of Secrets, but it actually came up a surprisingly large amount of time because of your Inkmod Nexus, that Galvanic Blast would deal 4 damage. In fact, it happened in the semifinals at this Pro Tour.
Yeah, he double Galvanic Blasted John Finkel. Oh, triple Galvanic Blasted. Oh, that's right!
Yeah, one of them got negated, and it wasn't good enough.
Yeah. I mean, Q, this is a synergy deck with, like, weird synergies like Galvanic Blast, Ink Moth Nexus. Your Primeval Titan actually grabs you 2 artifacts for your Galvanic Blast, so that it becomes a 1-mana better than Lightning Bolt.
This deck is just a thing of beauty. This is one of my favorite decks of all time. The Green Sun Zenith in this deck is just awesome. And I really think
Acidic Slime, Birds of Paradise, Thrun,
Huntmaster of the Fells. I really think that Huntmaster is what pushed this deck over the top.
I mean, Huntmaster is in like is my second favorite green red four drop of all time.
I think it is my favorite. I like it better than Bloodbraid Elf, just because I think it's slightly more interesting.
I mean, it's just super fun to play with, right? Because, like, how great is it that you can just be like, ship the turn, and your opponent's like, oh my goodness. All right. If I don't cast a spell,
I'm dead.
I'm going to... That's not what I was going to say. But it is great. It, like, Huntmaster of the Fells just stabilizes the board instantly.
It is such a good card. It was awesome against aggro. You're getting multiple bodies and a little bit of a life buffer, and it's awesome against control for the same reason. You've got multiple bodies that I have to deal with, and then it gets really out of hand if they can't kill it right away.
They're like, oh, fetch. Like, I tapped out, he played a Huntmaster of the Fells, I'm dead.
Right.
I actually just can't beat the 4-4 side of this.
Right, and then if I do, then my opponent's going to play a Primeval Titan, and I'm dead.
Yeah, so this is like... One of the, I agree with Quentin, this is just actually one of the most beautiful decks of all time. I'd like to read the sideboard too, because it also has some of my favorite cards in it. So it has two Ancient Grudge, because Timber Steel was a thing right here. An Autumn's Veil, two Beast Within, two Combust, two Naturalize. It played Naturalize! This might be the only deck list I've ever seen that played Naturalize since we started playing. Two Thrun the Last Troll, and one of my favorite cards that, like, just... Oh, I love it so much. It's Garrick Primal Hunter. For those of you who have never played with 5-mana Garrick, he's a thing of sweetness, too. He pluses to put a 3-3 into play. He minus 3s to draw a card equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. You're playing Titans.
Yeah, draw 6 is good.
And then his minus 6 is put a 6-6 green worm into play for every land you control. This deck plays two Karn Liberated out of the board, and a second Whip Flare. Man, is this deck the Sweetness Cube or what?
Yeah, man, Karn was such a fun card in Standard too. Oh man, this is making me want to go back to this time.
Me too, man. But the deck gets better. It's actually one of my favorite stories where Quentin and Matt convinced me not to play a deck that would have won me a PTQ.
That's a bit of a stretch.
I won my win in and took ninth. If I would have just been playing the better version of the deck.
It's still a bit of a stretch.
Well, this deck is actually just like one of my favorite decks of all time, and it's not close. So what happened is Abyssin Restored came out, and you know, things like Huntmaster of the Fells, they look kind of silly against things like Restoration Angel. And so the deck needed to adapt again. Hugh, how did the deck adapt?
Well, we're taking on a different color here, and we start to play blue. And now that we've got the Miracle mechanic going, we play blue for Ponder and Temporal Mastery and Bonfire of the Damned.
Well, we're not playing blue for Bonfire of the Damned. We're playing blue for Frost Titan and a Phantasmal Image.
Well, I was talking about setting up the Bonfire of the Damned with your Ponder.
Oh, sure.
Because that was a thing.
That was fantastic. So let's read this this deck list for the Star City Games Open. Reed Duke played this the week after the PTQ. I hate you.
I'm sorry.
He used two Frost Titan, two Phantasmal Image, four Primeval Titan, one Snapcaster Mage. Oh my goodness! That Snapcaster Mage cast all of them Far Seeks. Oh man. So this is actually right after M15 came out, by the way. We have three Solemn Simulacrum, two Thrag Tusk, and Phantasmal Imaging of Thrag Tusk, one Blasphemous Act, oh my goodness, three Bonfire of the Damned, four Farseeks, four Ponder, four Rampant Growth, four Temporal Masteries. So one thing that you'll see here is we have no Sphere of the Suns, we got rid of Galvanic Blast, we replaced that with things like Bonfire of the Damned, and then we gained a lot of power. One thing that happened is Wolfrun met its match. And basically, what happened is Rug Wolfrun had a good matchup against basically everything in the field except one deck. Do you know what that deck was, Q?
Was it Birthing Pod?
It was not Birthing Pod.
It
played Mutagenic Growth.
Oh, it was Infect.
Yeah. You could not beat Infect to save your life. And there was nothing you could ever do to change that. So what happens is they just cut Galvanic Blast because they're like, you know what? Delver's never beating us because our ramp spells get underneath them, and they're like, they can't, like, we just are so threat dense with between, like, Frost Titan, Primeval Titan, Thrag Tusk, Phantasmal Images, and, like, Miracle Bonfires that they just, and we now have Cavern of Souls.
Yeah, I was going to say that Cavern of the Souls was a huge tipping point for this deck. When you're being able to cast your Primeval Titans with, you know, without any problem, or your Thrag Tusks without them getting mana leaked.
Yeah.
Real good shape.
Yeah. The tech of main deck Glimmer Post, there's five colorless lands in this three-color deck queue. There's four Glimmer Posts and one Inkmoth Nexus. And there's two Cavern Souls, so there's really seven.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It didn't matter, though. This deck was the bee's knees. This is, like, one of my favorite standard decks of all time. So, Q, we have a whole evolution here. We have this Rug Force deck that turned into a Volica deck, and then all those cards are together, like, no big deal, Wolf Run Ramp, and then we actually go back to a Rug deck. Isn't that weird?
That is interesting. I actually never really thought of it that way.
Q, there was another deck in the middle of this that we didn't include here, and that's actually another deck that won a GP, and there was actually two more Primeval Titan decks in Innistrad Standard. Do you want to talk about those really quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, we have the deck that won GP Orlando by Conley Woods. This was a black-green Wolf Run deck playing Grave Titan and Primeval Titan instead. This deck played two Green Sun Zenith, four Rampant Growth, two Acidic Slime, one Birds of Paradise, one Gliss of the Traitor, four Grave Titan, four Primeval Titan, four Solemn Simulacrum, three Doomblade, two Geth's Verdict, two Ratchet Bomb. What would you give for Geth's Verdict right now, by the way, Q? Four green, Sphere of the Suns, and then its sideboard was one Ancient Grudge, two Batterskull. Batterskull became actually kind of popular tech for Wolf Run decks later, because you could put it on top of things like your Birds of Paradise and things like that. Four Black Sun Zenith out of the board, two Course of Death Holds, one Garrick, one Go for the Throat, one Liliana, one Nihil Spellbomb, one Thrun, look at that, one Tree of Redemption, and one Viridian Corruptor.
So this is a Conley Woods winning deck list from GP Orlando.
Yeah.
And I would give a lot for Geth's Verdict, by the way.
Yeah, it still played things. They still played, like, one Mountain, one Dragon Skull Summit, so that it could activate its Kessick Wolf Runs and still play its Inkmoth Nexuses. Or Nexi. Yeah,
that's why Primeval Titan's so sweet. You don't really need much other than one source of it to activate that Kessick Wolf Run.
Oh, my goodness.
This deck was very cool, too. This was actually a very cool tournament. Conley really built this deck geared towards Delver. When you see stuff like Geth's Verdict was his tech versus
Geist of Tradecraft,
yep. And then he's got some Black Suns and some Curse of Death Holds for the Delver matchup as well. So
Grave Titan also great against Geist of Tradecraft.
Geist of Tradecraft and Vapor Snag.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh. Ooh, goody goody. Yeah, definitely teched out. The other deck that saw a little less play, a little more on, like, the PTQ and SCG circuit, was Wolf Run White. This deck was a Wolf Run deck that played Day of Judgment. I believe it also played the double green 2-drop, though.
The double green 2-drop?
The Hasty guy.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Why am I having a brain fart in this?
It's okay. I am, too.
I should
Strangle Root Geist.
That's the one.
Didn't it play that card too?
So, I played the green-white deck a few times. I don't know if there was a different iteration, but there definitely could have been decks with that. I believe I played the Viridian Emissary when I played it.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. I mean, you're in a Day of Judgment. You might as well get some lands out of it.
Right, exactly. I mean, this deck was sweet. You got to play Elesh Norn as your 7-drop. That card killed people a lot and was pretty decent in the mirror.
I mean, it stopped them from ever attacking you with an Inkmoth Nexus.
Right, exactly. Made yours pretty beefy.
Yeah, your Inkmoth Nexus obviously got huge. I'm going to pull up a deck list really quick so that we can kind of talk about it. And, well, apparently I'm not going to do it too fast. Let me turn off my Wi-Fi because I'm actually hardlined. But, yeah, I think that, like, those two decks were kind of, like, caught in the middle of things. obviously, like, there was the Rug Control deck. I believe that deck sometimes played Primeval Titan, where it was, like, that Inferno Titan, Frost Titan deck with Mana Leak that played ramp spells. Do you remember that deck, Q?
You're just talking about the Jason Mind Sculptor deck?
Yeah.
I never saw a version that played Primeval Titan. Maybe there are a few that played, like, a one-of.
Yeah, I think that's what I remember is, like, I mean, eventually the Rug Force deck stopped playing Primeval Titan 2 completely.
There's a Rug Force deck without Primeval Titan?
Yeah, it just played Inferno Titan and Frost Titan because they're actually, they do the same thing.
They kill your opponent?
Yeah, they just kill your opponent and, like, whatever, they get rid of whatever in the way.
Interesting.
So, like, there's certainly a lot of things that can happen. I believe that, okay, here we go. So, this is way later. This has Thrak Tusk in it.
I remember playing it later, like against Delver and stuff like that.
Oh, this is crazy. So this is the top 16 from a Denver Open. This is 3 Cavern of Souls, 1 Copperline Gorge, 5 Forest, 4 Glimmer Post, 1 Ink Moth, 1 Kessick, 1 Mountain, 4 Plains, 1 Slayer Stronghold, 4 Sunpetal Grove. What I would give for this cycle of lands again, by the way. I actually was, like, convinced that these were coming in Magic Origins. I was like, we are getting all 10 check lands again, and it is about time because they are perfect for Standard.
Yeah, I think these are the ideal lands for Standard, for sure.
Yeah, I think that they're just amazing, and we should have them I understand people don't like having them all the time, but we should just have them all the time.
Well, what they could do is just change the art each time, and I'd be fine with it.
Yeah. We have 1 Acidic Slime, 2 Elish Norn, 4 Primeval Titan, 1 Sigarda, 3 Silum Simulacrum, 2 Thrak Tusk, 4 Day of Judgment, 2 Dismember, 4 Farseek, 2 Green Sun Zenith, 2 Oblivion Ring, 4 Rampant Growth, 1 Terminus. And then, Quentin, there's a Gideon in this deck, but it's the Sweet Gideon.
The Sweet Gideon?
Gideon Jura.
Man, that is a Sweet Gideon.
And 2 Karn Liberated. So, this deck's a little bit different. It's like a Wolf Run deck that, like, played ramp spells and then, like, had Day of Judgment to clean up the board rather than Slagstorm and Whip Flare. I think this deck was just always a little bit worse, in my opinion.
I think the biggest reason for that was that you were kind of a dog to Delver with this deck.
At this time you weren't with Rug.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So what, when you look back, why were there so many different versions of each of these decks? I mean, when you think about Volokut, there was no stock list for Volokut. When you think of Wolfrun, there was a little bit more stock list. But, like, Rug Force and Rug Wolfrun, they all had very varying decks every week. What? Why is it that in a world where Niopod was super stock and Delver was super stock, and even Cobblade was extremely stock, there was this green deck that just alternated all the time?
I think the biggest thing was how good its mana was. You saw just barely, we have 3 different splashes in the deck. We have blue, black, and white, or excuse me, 4, and red. When you're playing cards like Rampant Growth and Primeval Titan, your mana's awesome. So that really allows you to just go whatever direction you want to.
I would like to mention that I do believe there was just a Wolf Run blue deck for a little while. I think that it was like one tournament where it was just like this green-blue ramp deck with just Frost Titan, Phantasmal Image, and it just didn't play the red. So it was like Rug Wolf Run without the red, but it wasn't as good.
Yeah, it seems like it wouldn't be.
Right. So there was that deck. There was even just a version before that with just Phantasmal Image and Frost Titan, but it just had a worse aggro matchup. So there was just infinity. I think Quinn's right. I think there were just infinite ways that you could build this deck. Primeval Titan does that.
Yeah, when you have all the options you want on getting your lands, turn 4 or 5, I mean, you can do whatever you want, pretty much.
Right. So, what kept it so that Wolfrun and Volokut just weren't the best decks? Because Primeval Titan saw crazy amounts of play for 2 years. Why was it? I mean, obviously there was a time where Wolfrun was the best deck. There was a time where Volokut was the best deck. But why don't we look back and think of these decks like Cobblade or like Jund or like Fairies?
Well, that's actually a pretty decent question. I think that Cobblade really overshadowed this deck a lot because it ended up just kind of pushing it out, like you said, when Batterskull came into play. As for Wolf Run, I mean, players really think that Delver was a lot better deck because overall it had a lot more tournament success.
Q, I can't hear you, bud. Are you still there? Q?
Yes?
What in the world?
What's wrong?
My, like, internet just went out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but we're fine now. Okay. So the last thing I heard you say is people felt like Delver had a lot more success.
Yes. Besides the Pro Tour, I think it did win a lot more SCGs than Wolf Run Ramp did.
And it won a lot of GPs in the hands of Yuya Watanabe.
I mean, at least five. So I don't know. That's a very good question. Maybe Infect was just played enough that it really kept Wolf Run down.
Yeah, I mean, eventually its only bad matchup was that. But it was played enough at that time where, I mean, even at my FNM level, like, I had a hard time because I wanted to play Rogue Wolf Run, but I just, if anyone ever played a Glistener Elf, I was going to lose.
Right. And even though Delver had a rough matchup against Wolf Run, I don't think it was, I mean, obviously it wasn't nearly as bad as the matchup Wolf Run had with.
Oh, no. No, I think that Delver's only, like, I think its bad matchups were obviously Mono Red. I think that Mono Red had a pretty good matchup against Delver. But the thing is that Wolf Run kept Mono Red kind of down in that format. Whereas, like, things like Pod, Delver just couldn't beat that deck. Vapor Snag was just terrible against that deck.
Well, I kind of disagree there. I do think that the matchup was bad, but I still think the matchup was winnable. I mean, Delver was kind of like the Jund deck at the time, where even your bad matchups, you've got a shot to win. Like, you're still pretty close to 50-50, just because if you play a Delver and flip it with Mana Leak or Vapor Snag, you're probably going to kill a lot of people no matter what they have in their hand.
So, like, on the play, Delver's win percentage shot up, just for that draw, right? Where you just blind flip your Delver off of a Mana Leak.
Right.
But I can honestly say that I don't believe I ever lost a match playing Pod to Delver. Not one time.
I certainly beat plenty of Pod players.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that you have. I mean, the thing is that Delver was so skill intensive, but there were so many people playing it.
That is true.
So it's kind of hard for me to evaluate because it was still when I was like playing a lot of FNMs and I was just winning a lot more than I do now because I don't play FNMs anymore. But I wonder why we don't view Primeval Titan decks the same way. I think people who played then, like people who played against Primeval Titan, do have kind of a reverence for it the way that they do Stoneforge Mystic and the way that they do Delver of Secrets. But I think that people that played very little in that time, they don't realize it really is one of the great decks of history. It lasted for 2 years with six different iterations.
Right, with two Pro Tour wins, that's a huge deal.
Right. I mean, it's something great, and it's something that should really be appreciated. So, with that being said, what made these decks so great, Q? Is it just the versatility? Is it just how powerful Primeval Titan and Inferno Titan were? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's a good mix of both. I think, like we said earlier, that the deck kind of lends itself to just being able to go in any direction that you want to build it towards, and that when you cast Primeval Titan, you're really clocking your opponent very quickly. You're forcing them to do something, or else they're going to die.
Yeah, I mean, if they... there was a time where... I think that it was... There was a pro player from Utah that, like, had gone to lots of Nationals and Pro Tours, and what we had decided is, like, the win percentage of Valakut was close to, like, 90% if you ever turned a Primeval Titan into sideways. If your Primeval Titan attacked, that was, like, and got through, like, you just couldn't lose.
Yeah, I would say that it was probably higher than 90%.
It was very high. If your Primeval Titan connected and got you two lands, you were going to win that game.
Right. And having a creature there that's like, if it attacks me, I'm going to die. There are not a lot of creatures like that.
Yeah, and like the only things that really dealt with it were like Go for the Throat and Doomblade, and the black decks just weren't great then.
Right. And then the problem is that you've got two lands that you got to deal with after that.
Yeah, I mean like with Volokut, it was like your ramps, you just turned your ramp spells into kill spells. With Wolfrun, like, I mean, you have to kill a land.
Right, that Ink Moth is going to get you in one or two shots.
And it does not die to a Go for the Throat.
No, it does not.
So there were a lot of things. I think that, like, if there's a deck that I would say is the epitome of consistency in my time playing Magic, it's just whatever the Primeval Titan deck was of that format. Those decks were just super consistent. They did the same thing a lot. And the thing that they did was very powerful, and it shut some decks out of the format.
Oh yeah, certainly there are probably a good amount of aggro decks that could have existed without this deck being around.
Right. So, how can we learn from these decks moving forward? We're going into a time where we have Desolate Twin. We didn't even include the mono green ramp deck with like Emrakul in it, right?
Yeah, that is another one, Eldrazi Green.
Eldrazi Green was a great deck. How can we learn from these Primeval Titan decks going into Battle for Zendikar Q?
Well, I think it's kind of what we were talking about before the training grounds. It really helps us evaluate what a ramp deck will look like with the card pool that we have. And I think that Spencer and I's consensus is that it may not be good in this case because we don't have the good ramp spells to get there, or the decent creatures to bridge the gap to Primeval Titan or, you know, your big Eldrazi in this standard.
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly powerful cards. I think the thing that we can learn from this is finding ways around problems. One of the biggest problems that the ramp deck had leaving Zendikar was, oh my gosh, I don't have Cultivate. Oh my gosh, I don't have Harrow. Oh my gosh, I don't have Colony Heart Expedition. What am I ever going to do? And it found very interesting ways of ramping. Green Sun Zenith for Birds of Paradise? Quinn, were you ever going to consider Green Sun Zenith a ramp spell?
I mean, I certainly didn't see it coming.
Yeah, it was something that, thanks to testing with Gavin Hafey, it was actually funny. We actually had the Wolf Run ramp deck ready for States. If I'm not mistaken, it won the week. Wolf Run ramp actually won the week before. The only difference is we didn't have Ink Bomb Nexus in it. And then Ink Bomb, we just put in Ink Bomb Nexus.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And that's just something that it's Sphere of the Suns. Were you going to ever play Sphere of the Suns in your life if you weren't playing Wolf Run, Quinn?
Probably not.
No. And it found interesting ways to do things. And I think I do expect Rattleclaw Mystic to like be the cornerstone of the ramp decks. But I think that what can happen is they're going to start playing spot removal or even cards that, there's now two cards that deal one damage to all of your opponent's creatures to keep your Rattleclaw Mystic in play. I think that the deck building for ramp decks will become interesting, but I believe that ramp is such a strong archetype that it will always be a thing. I mean, the one thing that I've seen people talk about is how bad they think that the new Awakening Zone is, Q. And you and I both think it's great, right?
Yeah, I think it's a plenty solid card.
Yeah, and the thing is that if there's anything I can learn is that from Volokut to Wolfrun is that finding a way to just play powerful cards is very important, and then finding synergies inside of that. You know, there was a time where I was trying to brew with the 3-mana defender creature that tapped for any color of mana equal to the number of defenders you controlled. Like, there's always something you can do to try and win. No, we have two very powerful Magic cards in the form of Fiery Impulse and Nissa's Pilgrimage that both care about each other being in the graveyard. That's already a great start to a green-red ramp deck because it's spot removal for their early big threats, and because it's a lightning bolt for their creatures, plus a very, very powerful card as far as ramping you and hitting your next land drops. So we already have a great start to this kind of thing. The question is how fast is this format? If it slows down, 4-mana ramp might be great. We have explosive vegetation, Quentin.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. Like, if the aggro decks don't show up in force, I do think this deck could see success.
Yeah, so stay tuned for stuff like that. But there's also going to be formats that might, like, that you do have those 2-mana ramp spells, that you do have 2-mana into Solemn Simulacrum, and you're like, well, what are you going to do now? Or 2-mana into Huntmaster of the Fells, what are you going to do now? And then that Huntmaster of the Fells saves you time to get to things like Primeval Titan. Well, it's probably not going to be Primeval Titan, but it's going to be something, right?
I assume we'll always have big fatties to cast. That seems to be people's jam.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from this deck, and I think one of them is really to keep an open mind. Because, man, I beat a lot of people playing Expedition Max Provolicute. I don't know if you ever played against that deck, Q.
I don't think I did.
Yeah, so Volokut was actually a tier, like, 3 deck before Primeval Titan was printed. Where it was, like, Expedition Maps and Ramp Spells to, like, kill you with their Ramp Spells. And then Primeval Titan was printed, and they're like, oh, well, let's do that.
That guy's pretty good.
That seems better. So, in the end, I think that this archetype teaches us a few things. One of the things I think it teaches us is that you don't have to be a blue deck to be a control deck in the form of Kessel Wharf Run. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover in Inkmoth Nexus Kessel Wharf Run. Like, what? Who thought of that?
Crazy talk.
Yeah. And there's so much that we can learn from just studying the decks of history. And luckily we got to talk about one of those this week. I had fun. Did you have fun, Q?
Oh, yeah. Great training grounds.
Yeah, I mean, just looking back on some of these decks and, like, even though it might be a little weird for you who didn't get to play with these decks, it's still, man, it's just a great time.
Oh, yeah. During these dead times in the format, I certainly have to find ways to entertain myself because I can't be doing it without Magic, obviously. But go back and watch some coverage with this deck in it. You'll certainly learn a lot and see an awesome deck.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fan of the week. So who's the fan of the week this week, Q?
This week it is... Oh, man, I have my show notes closed right now, but his name is...
His name is Nick.
Nick, what's his last name, though?
You got to pronounce it for me.
If I actually tried, it would be Deliskavy, I guess?
Yeah. I actually don't know how to pronounce his last name. I've known Nick for, like, multiple years. I have no idea how to pronounce his last name. But Nick has actually been one of the people that I've talked to about creating... he actually offered to, like, Photoshop me and see if he could make a token out of me. Something that is coming up is we are going to get our tokens made. That is my next priority for the podcast. So, and there's a few people that are interested in helping us out, and it sounds like Nick is one of them. But Nick is also just, like, a great fan of the show, like, telling people about the show and things like that. That means the world to us when people can, like, really sell the show for us and, like, tell other people about it.
Yeah, Nick's a great guy. I've known him for quite some time. I remember my first pre-release, he was there, and that was, like, 4 years ago or something like that. I've seen him around Magic tournaments locally here in Salt Lake since. It's always a pleasure to play against him and have him at tournaments.
Yeah, he's, like, one of the nicest guys of all time, and, like, it means a lot to me, like, that when, like, local players will pump the podcast. Because local players have known us for years, right? Like, we're nothing special to those guys, like, other than, like, crushing people at FNMs. Like, I mean, that's it, right? Like... And, like, we become the villains at that point, right? We're not really the heroes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, it's great to have guys like Nick around. He always loses gracefully and wins gracefully.
Right.
Is always nice to new players. Like, he was very nice to me when I was a very new player, so.
Yeah. I think that that's exactly right. And we appreciate things like that more than people might realize. So thanks a lot, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
Quentin, what's a clan?
We have a clan on Magic Online. If you would like to join and jam some games with some fellow listeners, you can message me. My name is Earthstripe. That's U-R-T-H-S-T-R-Y-P-E. Send me a message, and I would be glad to add you to our clan.
Yeah, I slept in today, so I didn't play in a draft or a 8-man like I normally do on Mondays. So I apologize for those who might have been hoping to get a hold of me. My name is Spencer 13 H on Moto. I usually play on Mondays right now. Sometimes I play on Sundays, but I did not get the chance today. So if you were hoping for it, like I say every week, to message me on a Monday, I do apologize. Man, life gets busy.
Yeah, life does happen.
To be fair, it's great too. I was sending out, well, I only got four hours of sleep on Sunday because of the BYU game.
What? Well, oh, you work the next day.
Right, so like Sunday I work at 6 a.m. and I was like, I couldn't fall asleep after the BYU game. So I got 4 hours of sleep going into Sunday. So then like Sunday night I just like could not wake up, and I woke up at 10. I played a match of Modern, which I'm dedicating myself to do every day, and then I had to go send out Patreon rewards.
Busy day.
Yeah, busy day for sure. And then I work out on Mondays, so I apologize to listeners. Speaking of sending out Patreon rewards, I do that by going to our sponsor at Oasis Games. Check them out at OasisGamesLC.com. They are legitimately the only place I buy Magic cards from. If you really haven't checked out Oasis Games, and you're like, oh, man, I like love this podcast, but I don't want to like pay for shipping, when they're like, I'd rather support my local card shop, just do it once. Like 15% off is going to be a huge deal, and you won't regret it. And you might just start shopping there, because there's just not a lot of shops out there that are better than Oasis Games.
Very true. Yeah. Certainly, if you just try it once, that's definitely going to help, and you can get your 15% off. But then I believe you will be convinced that shopping there time and time again is definitely worth it. We always say that Alex is a great cause to support. He's an awesome Magic player and just an awesome friend to us. So please check them out.
Yeah, it would mean a lot to us. If you don't want to do that and you still want to support this podcast, you can always just join and become a patron. That's at patreon.com/ccmtg. Like I said, these rewards, they're going to be changing, and we're going to make this awesome. I'm like really excited. I have a few ideas. We've gotten a few ideas from people. You can submit your ideas, ccmtg.info@gmail.com. That's where you can email us. You can leave a comment. There's a thread on the Patreon that's available for everyone. Leave a comment on that thread. We're happy to hear from you. So check it out. You can donate as little as $1 and above, and any amount means the world to us.
Absolutely. Please check out our Patreon.
Yeah. Q, where can people find you?
Find me on Facebook. Just type in Quentin Pierce as it's spelled. Send me a friend request. Twitter, at Quentin Pierce, just like it's spelled. I guess I should mention Magic Online once again. My name is Earthstripe, U-R-T-H-S-T-R-Y-P-E.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. That's Spencer Stephen Howland, not Spencer Howland. The other one is just an account for my family. You can find me on Magic Online at Spencer13Dev. That's Spencer13DEV. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Reddit at Spencer13H. You can find me on Pokemon Online at Spencer13H. Basically, if there's a Spencer13H out there, it's probably me. You can also find the podcast at CCMTG on Facebook. You can find us at Constructive Criticism. Give us a like. It sounds like there's a big want to create a Constructive Criticism group. That will likely be happening, so stay tuned for that. You can also find the podcast on iTunes at Oasis Games. So when you're in iTunes, just search for Oasis Games. Leave us a review, let us know what you think, and share your thoughts with others. That means the world to us, for everybody who can leave us a review. You can also find us on Stitcher. Basically every podcast app, we're there, so check us out and subscribe. You can find us on MTGcast as well as OasisGamesSLC.com. Quinn, where can you find the stream?
Well, we have a stream that goes on Wednesdays at 6 o'clock Mountain Time. Our stream is twitch.tv/ccmtg. Come hang out with us on Wednesday nights and play some Magic.
Yeah. Monday Night Football's not happening because it's Wednesday, so you have no excuse not to watch. Come check it out. We did have a great chat last week. It was amazing.
And during the time where Standard is not so exciting, so that's very encouraging. Thank you guys for coming out.
Yeah. And we have a request to do something else this week, and we will try to do that for you guys. Hashtag would that be good. Quentin, what is hashtag would that be good?
Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you have a question about Magic or life in general, go ahead and send it to Twitter with hashtag would that be good, and one of us or one of our fans will answer it for you.
Okay. So the date is the 21st. This means that when... How far do we go back now? So, the 15th?
Let's see here. Yeah, that sounds right.
Well, didn't we do this one already? The one on the 15th? It must be the 16th, right?
I don't think we did we?
So the one about Abbott Zoo?
I don't even remember the 49ers one.
What? Maybe I just answered these? Oh, that might be what it is. Huh.
Yeah, I remember Bodie's tweet, and then I'm pretty sure what we went off talking about how bad the new lands were.
Okay.
Your tweet.
I see. How bad the new lands were?
Yeah, the Eldrazi lands.
Oh, the Eldrazi lands, I see. Yeah, I mean, technically the 14th would be the last time we did it. So that would be... Starting with the 49ers tweet, the 49ers actually going to the playoffs this year. Hashtag would that be good? So this is one of those awesome non-Magic tweets that we get to talk about on the podcast. What do you think about the 49ers making the playoffs?
That's a good question. I actually haven't watched their first two games. Have you seen any of their play?
Well, so they're 1-1 right now. I work on Sunday, so I like watch the red zone while I'm working. So I don't get to see a lot of gameplay other than like in the end zone. And unfortunately for the 49ers, they just haven't really been in the end zone much this season so far. They won 20-3 against the Vikings and then lost 18-43 against the Steelers. So I just unfortunately only watching red zone while I'm working, I just don't get to see a lot of them. It's hard. It's hard because I do believe that they, like, fired a legitimately good coach. Didn't really fire him. They, like, separated ways or whatever. And that's something that's going to, I believe, will actually take time to get over. So, CJ, I wouldn't get your hopes up, but, like, if they make the playoffs, that's, like, great for a first-year coach.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. When you change coaches, there's usually a lot of turmoil. So, hopefully, they can bounce back quickly, though. Because I actually do like the 49ers.
Luckily, they're in the division with, like, the terrible Seahawks and the terrible... My wife is, like, standing right next to me. This is why I'm saying this.
You're about to get smacked.
She actually has her hand out as though she's about to smack me. You can just talk.
I'm going to ruin your podcast.
You're going to ruin my podcast?
You won't stop it.
No, I think that, like, if they make the playoffs on their coach's first year, like, that's fantastic.
The Seahawks are the best.
And my wife says the Seahawks are the best if you couldn't hear her.
Oh, wait, we could hear
her. Suck it, Quentin.
Suck it, Quentin.
I've heard that.
His team just beat yours.
Shut up! That's why we said suck it!
Goldfishing Grixisdek while waiting for the opening ceremony of the Swedish parliament to begin. Hashtag, would that be good? Yeah? That seems really good. Victor is crushing it on the... He's waiting for the Swedish parliament to begin playing Magic?
That seems the way to wait for something in my eyes.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Eggbeat says, at Spencer13H, Abbott Zoo ready for tonight. Hashtag would it be good. At Red Bull. Okay.
That one's interesting.
We have four Abbott, four... oh my goodness. What is this card called? What's the one mana 3/3?
Wild Nacatl.
Four step links, Three lightning bolt. Is that three lightning bolt? Oh, no, there's a fourth one there.
That's four.
That's four, okay. Four Grim Lavamancer, four Monastery Swiss Spear, four Curdape, four... This deck is entirely a four-up deck. Four Tarmogoy, four Boris Charm, four Atargus Command. So, I talked a little bit with Eggbeat about this. So, he doesn't really like Atargus Command. And my thought is, like, I probably would only play two Grim Lavamancers, and I would find room for a Goblin Guide in here. But I actually don't hate Atargus Command in this deck. I just think that you need to find a way to exploit it a little bit better. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Cedric Phillips is playing with a deck kind of similar to this in the Modern Super League. I mean, you're certainly playing a lot of powerful cards, so I envision this type of strategy being fine. I think I would agree with Spencer, though. I think I would rather have the Goblin Guide over the Steplinks.
Yeah. And that being said, like, it could be you still play some number of Steplinks, because I don't think you want four Grim Lavamancer.
Right, I definitely could see that.
So, but I think that, like, maybe two Steplinks and four Goblin Guides and maybe two Grim Lavamancers is kind of how I'd go with it. We have enjoying the Mega Rankings episode. Black-White Dragons with Abbott has been working well for me. Good versus the blue control decks.
That's Black-Red Dragons.
What did I say?
Black-White.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, so I don't know why I'd say that. yeah, Black-Red Dragons is a deck that I've considered playing in this standard format. I think that it's just great right now. I also think it's great versus control, by the way.
I could certainly see that. You've got a lot of staying power. You can play cards like Goblin Rabble Master and Abbott for early pressure, and then you've got the big dragons late in the game and lands that bring him back, so I could certainly see that being the case, and let's not forget Thoughtseize.
Yeah. I think that the Black Red Dragons is a great choice right now, and I'm glad you enjoyed the Mega Rankings episode.
So let me go back here. I think we may have skipped one.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, I see one from Jason that says Jeskai Ascendancy with Noyan Dar to cheat the mana system.
Would that be good? I literally don't see that. Where did you see that?
It's right below the zoo tweet. So it's interesting. You can't see it.
Oh my gosh! I have it below the goldfishing tweet.
Oh, okay.
I missed it. Jeskai Ascendancy with Noyan Dar cheat the mana system has to be good. Is tutelage asking too much at that point?
So is Noyan Dar a card?
I would assume so. I'm about to Google it.
Sweet name.
Royal Shaper.
Oh, okay. The new blue-white guy.
Oh, this card is good.
I think this card is good, too.
Man, I don't know.
This card actually might be insane. We should have mentioned this when we were talking about Elspeth replacements.
Yeah. So, yeah, this card is great. How does it cheat the mana, though?
To cheat the mana system... because they become
creatures. Oh my goodness.
Mind blown.
Jason, you might have broken standard. I don't know. Is Tutelage asking too much? Probably.
Man, that card is sweet in that deck.
You probably don't need that. I mean, so for those who don't know, why don't you read Noyan Dar for them?
Okay, so we've got three colorless, a blue and a white for a 4/4. Legendary creature merfolk ally. What?
That's a lot of words already.
Yeah. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you may put 3/+1/+1 counters on target land you control. If you do, that land becomes a 0/0 elemental creature with haste that's still a land.
Yeah, so this card's fantastic.
I really think this card's good, too. I'm glad you think it's good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I saw this card, I was like, well, this card's insane.
Yeah, and sweet.
And I didn't even think of it with Jeskai Ascendancy.
No, I did not think of that too. And even if it's not good in that deck, it's sweet. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I do think that combination of cards is great. I don't know where Jeskai Ascendancy will land in the future format. But obviously, like, if every time you cast an instant sorcery, you untap your creatures, it turns a creature into a land. Like, I mean, eventually it's just infinite mana for as long as you have spells, right?
Yeah, so let's go ahead and play devil's advocate here. I mean, very excited, obviously, to see that card, Jeskai Ascendancy. But when Jeskai Ascendancy does play 5-mana spells that are big, they have gone with Ojutai in the past. And that's generally because they want a way to finish the game if their original game plan doesn't work out.
But this is the same thing, right? It just makes a bunch of 3/3s.
The difference is that Ojutai is very good when you have an empty hand.
I see.
But I still think this is sweet and definitely could possibly be good.
Is it win more, or is it win? Is it just your way to win?
Well, I mean, it might be win more. Ojutai is definitely a safer bet, as you don't... I mean, this guy can just die a lot easier than Ojutai, for sure, but...
What kills this card at instant speed right now? Or going into this format, I should say.
Well, I mean, I assume you're tapping out for this guy.
Sure.
So, I mean, not much kills it at instant speed.
But you can definitely kill it at sorcery speed.
Yeah, definitely sorcery speed is going to be good enough.
What an interesting set of circumstances we have with this card. I like this tweet a lot, Jason. Thanks a lot, man.
I do, too. I'm glad we went back.
This deck is insane. You should try it out. This is a tweet from Bodhi. It is Abbot Delver in Modern. It's got 4 Attacking Probe, 4 Serum Visions, 4 Abbot of Carol Keep, 4 Delver of Secrets, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, 4 Snapcaster Mage, 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Remand, 4 Vapor Snag, 4 Mishra's Bauble.
Interesting.
I mean, Mishra's Bauble plus Abbot is an interesting combination.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I think that my only problem with this deck is that you only have 20 sources to flip your Delver. That's only 1/3 of your deck.
That is interesting, but back in standard days, that was about the minimum you should have.
Yeah, I think they always played 21, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was like the 20, 21, 22, that was kind of the sweet spot. And with this deck having Serum Visions, that means you can play a little less.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see. Well, I mean, I will test this deck out for the RPTQ for you, Bodhi.
This deck seems sweet to me, so thank you for pointing it out.
Next, we have Mardu Tokens in Modern, Butcher of the Horde, Crackling Doom, Young Pyromancer, and Bolt. Hashtag, would that be good? Maybe that would be good. I have no opinion on this. I wonder if Butcher of the Horde is a little extreme. What about you, Q?
So, I'm not seeing this tweet. Will you read it one more time?
Mardu Tokens in Modern, Butcher of the Horde, Crackling Doom, and Young Pyromancer. I skipped one. That's why you're not seeing it.
Oh, I see. I think that Butcher is probably not good enough in Modern. When you're talking about 4 drops in Modern... You're talking Siege Rhino and Bloodbraid Elf. That's the type of power level. Even a card like Huntmaster of the Fells is barely good enough to play like 1 or 2. So I don't see it being good. But that being said, there's only one way to figure that out, and that's
to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? It could be insane. I mean, 5 mana hasty creature seems good.
I mean, that is pretty good.
Yeah. I do like the idea of splashing red and black-white tokens for, like, Crackling Doom and Bolt, though.
I could definitely see Crackling Doom being Modern playable.
Yeah, doesn't that just kill the Seaver Exarch, like, all the time?
Does it?
I mean, there's no way they have a higher toughness creature.
It's power, though.
Oh, is it?
It is.
I don't know why this is happening to me.
You're beeping.
Yeah, sorry about that. All right, so next up, is it power?
It is.
I swore it was toughness.
Only one way to find out for sure.
Let's see here. Greatest power. I was wrong. Go, Quentin.
You know me.
Always on top of that stuff, that Quentin. Alright, hashtag, would that be good? To be fair, it's not like we need any good 2-drops. We all just play Hangerback Walker. Hashtag, would be good. We can skip that. That was me. Without fail, I think of Casey Bloodworth every time I hear the song, and I want grilled cheese. Hashtag, would that be good? The song is Walk the Moon, Shut Up and Dance. If you don't know this song, check it out. I do think of Casey every time I hear it, though.
I will never know why.
Well, it's just him when he's inebriated.
Oh, now I know why.
Could we think of a modern? Could we get a Modern Think Twice stream, but not Spencer Scapeshift? Well, you know what? I have posted 2 Scapeshift videos, so I don't blame you for that. I don't know why you put nobody wants to see that, because that's not true. Hashtag, would that be good? Yeah, did we talk to Matt on Sunday, Q?
He is working, so he cannot be here, but maybe I can chat with Alex and see if I can borrow his account for the stream.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. That is what we want to do on the stream this week is Modern, though. Likely to destroy every copy I see, hashtag, would that be good? This is from the Spike Feed podcast. So one of our listeners put a Strictly Better Sundale Hawk was spoiled, and then I put we forgot to mention Casey Bloodworth. And then the Spike Feed podcast, who has a running joke about that card, tweeted that they will destroy every copy they see. I don't know if it's good that they destroy every copy they see, because, I mean, that's Casey's favorite card of all time.
I think it's good. I'm going to go ahead and say this one is, or would that be good?
Okay. Continues to be my least favorite format of all time. My hatred of it grows every match. I do hate Standard right now. It is, in fact, my least favorite format of all time. And then Patrick says, Legacy Bro, hashtag, would it be good? I would play Legacy 1,000 times over Standard right now.
Legacy's great.
Yeah. Eggbeat says, at Spencer13H, at Beyonce, Knight of the Reliquary plus Retreat to Cornhelm in some format of Mythic Modern, hashtag, would it be good? I don't think so. A lot of people have been talking about this. Knight of the Reliquary has, you know, went up quite a bit in price even. I just don't see it. Quentin?
So, Retreat to Cornhelm, this is a landfall guy. You may tap or untap, took a creature and scry one. 3 to cast enchantment. I don't think this is going to be a thing.
So, it just makes your guy as big as possible, right?
Well, I mean, I think it just taps your opponent's creatures, right? I mean,
it's tap or untap, right?
Yes.
So, you untap your Knight of the Reliquary.
Oh, sure, and it's just infinite. Okay.
Right.
Got it. I don't really see this being a thing. So you're going Knight of the Reliquary turn 3, then playing this guy turn 4, and then you've got the biggest creature you want, and you can only tap one creature there, right? So it's not like you can just get a 20/20 and then tap out all their dudes and kill them. I don't think.
There's just not enough lands in your deck.
Well, there's not enough lands in your deck, and you have to keep untapping your knight to get.
Yeah, them. And they have to be, and you have to sacrifice a forest or a plains.
I don't see this. I could be wrong though.
I don't see it either. There's just no way. Like, there's you just can't afford to play that many forests or plains, and like, yeah, I agree with you. I just don't see it. I could be wrong though.
Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's like a sick combo where you definitely can tap all your opponent's creatures. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see it, but I mean, at least you're keeping an open mind. And you're tweeting at me with Beyonce.
That's always good.
We record tomorrow. Do you have any more hashtag with the be good you'd like to send in? Well, we got a few. One of them is from Kevin. He says, Hardcast is doing their first actual set review this week. Hashtag with the be good. Check out Hardcast. They're a great podcast. Kevin is a great guy. We've had him on episode 100. We think he's a great guy, and yeah.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, congratulations on your first set review, guys.
That's awesome.
Spencer 13H at Spike Feed at CCMTG Team Up hashtag would that be good? Well, I can in fact say that I am in contact with the Spike Feed podcast. Curtis and I are talking, and we will be setting up a cross episode. So
that would be good as well.
Yeah. So, Gwen, do you have any shout-outs this week?
I do. I have a shout-out to Brandon Baker. Brandon is a local player, a very nice guy. is at all the PPTQs and PTQs and stuff like that. And he offered to help me with anything I needed for testing. He actually made an awesome spreadsheet of a few decks in standard that and all the cards that are rotating out and like possible replacements and stuff. So thank you. I can use all the help I can get for preparing for this Pro Tour, and that means a lot.
Yeah, Brandon made a cube the day a limited cube of Magic Origins for Travis and I the day that Magic Origins was spoiled. And we actually got to draft Magic Origins the day it was spoiled. We drafted it 3 times the day it was spoiled.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so Brandon has been like a huge help to Alex, myself, and now even Quentin for like just a player that like really cares about the local community and like really trying to help us get ready for the Pro Tour. So thanks a lot, Brandon. I have a shout out to my wife. You know, a lot of people I think that marriage can be really hard, and you know, something that makes things like marriage a lot easier is compromise. And I appreciate my wife being willing to compromise with me and make marriage work. Marriage is like the hardest thing in the world that I've ever dealt with. But at the same time, it's like the greatest thing I've ever dealt with, because I get to just spend all the time with my best friend. But in any way in the world, you're going to get sick of somebody. Like, there's just times where Quentin probably is like, man, I really just don't want to talk to Spencer right now. He's being kind of a butthead. And luckily for Quentin, he just gets to not talk to me for a day. But you can't really do that when you're married to somebody. So there are times where you just got to come to a compromise. And luckily for me, I have a wife that's willing to do that. So shout out to her. Shout out to... I want to give a shout out to Matt Kling. This week was something really funny happened, and it might be funny to me. It's probably not funny to anybody else. I'm walking up to Quentin's house, and Matt Kling says to me, he goes, I can recognize your cough while I live on the street. For those who don't know, I suffer from a disorder that makes me take a certain medication, which causes dry throat. So I cough a lot, as many of you might have noticed on the podcast. Something out of my control. And I was like, Matt was like, recognized me from literally like 200 feet away.
Yeah, just about.
So shout out to him, you know, even though he never hangs out with me ever, he still recognizes my cough.
True friend.
Yeah. Also, I think Quinn did find that funny.
I did find that funny.
Well, Q, is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners? Did you love talking about Wolf Unwrapped for a few hours?
I did. I really enjoyed that. Talking about great decks and reliving some awesome memories, always a good time.
You guys got a little bit of a longer podcast this week, which is great because we finished like super early still.
Yeah, we're still in good shape here.
Yeah, and next week you'll get even a longer podcast.
And big old set review.
Yeah, next week is the set review, so... this is the time where to tell your friends about the podcast. Let them know that if they want to get ready to play some Magic and get a little bit ahead of the curve in Constructed, that Constructed Criticism is doing their set review, and to listen to it and get a little bit of an update on like what we think of each card. So thanks for listening, everybody. Quentin, I'm really sorry that your parents steal your Gerber baby money, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Hi. Magic.